Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And we have a very busy show today. We'll hear from local musician Rick Warren talking to WGXC's Randall Martin. Also, tune in for a conversation with scholar, rhythmist, analyst, and music artist DeForest Brown Jr., previewing his show Friday at RPI's MPAC. And we'll also hear the April 25th rally that the New York For All Coalition held at the Capitol in Albany in support of the New York For All Act, which prohibits local law enforcement and state agencies from working with the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, and Customs and Border Patrols. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after Jason Martin from Troy finishes singing this song, and then it's time for the local news on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network.
This is Darian Sahanaja of the band known as Wonderments, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC Accra.
Brooklyn Vegan runs down the lineup for the 2023 edition of 24-Hour Drone, set for May 27th through 28th at Basilica Hudson in Hudson. The annual event has been on hold in person since 2019 because of the COVID-19 pandemic. This year, the show is back in person with Yuka C. Honda of Saibo Mato, Wolf Eyes, Liturgy, Sarah Hines, Laura Ortman, and others performing at the event, which each year is webcast at WGXC.org and broadcast on 90.7 FM. The Basilica Hudson website has all the details about the 24-hour drone show May 27th and 28th at Basilica Hudson and will air on WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Lynn Sloniker of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe from Wave Farm with the WGXC Daily News for Thursday, April 27th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that the Columbia Green Community College Faculty Association and the school's Board of Trustees have agreed on a new contract that has been approved by the Greene County Legislature. The agreement goes through August 31, 2027. Quote, the settlement as a percentage of payroll ranges from 2.9% to 3.1% annually over the term of the six-year contract, unquote, said Diane Topple, the Columbia Green Community College Vice President for Administration and Chief Financial Officer. Quote, the average increase per employee also ranges from 2.9% to 3.1%. The range of increases per employee over the contract term range from 2% to 3.9%, depending on salary, unquote. College faculty member and former lead negotiator Gregory Berninger explained that the negotiations went well. Quote, it was done in-house. The faculty and administration worked on it together. I'm sure the lawyers were consulted, but we didn't need to bring in lawyers to duke it out, unquote. Greene County legislator Michael Bullock, a Republican from Catskill, was the only vote against the agreement. He explained he is against pay raises for teachers. Quote, I just think it's too high of a percentage over the course of the contract. Your budget will go up because of your payroll increases. Whenever the school's budget goes up, we have to get more from our property owners. We're going to keep increasing the cost of the government. I can't do that to the people of our communities here. There's got to be a more productive way, unquote. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com. Mari Thompson reports in the Post Star that Representative Paul Tonko is still trying to ban online and television advertising of sports gambling, but is not getting much help. Tonko introduced legislation to prohibit online and television advertising of sports gambling on February 9th, but so far his H.R. 967 bill has no co-sponsors. And Tonko's legislation is being criticized because sports gambling advertising is protected by the First Amendment. Going it alone so far, Tonko says, quote, we're very serious about this issue. It's operating in a mostly unregulated Wild West environment, unquote. While Tonko criticizes gambling advertising as, quote, relentless, unquote, he says, quote, I make it clear that I am not against legalized sports gambling. It's the advertising that we're focused on, unquote. Tonko, who represents Albany County and the rest of the 20th Congressional District, is also only concerned about ads for sports gambling, but not other gambling, as his proposed legislation would not ban advertising for state lottery games. Read more about this story in the Post Star. Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that Save-A-Lot is now trying to sell its Coxsackie distribution center for $25 million. The national grocery chain closed its warehouse in the Green Business and Technology Park along State Route 9W at the end of February. Quote, they are trying to sell it or lease it, unquote, said Greene County Industrial Development Agency Executive Director April Ernst at a recent IDA Board of Directors meeting. Ernst says so far four or five parties are interested in touring the 333,660-square-foot facility. Save-A-Lot is changing from a discount grocery store chain to a wholesale supplier for independently owned stores. 30 jobs were lost in Coxsackie when the warehouse closed. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. And Mid-Hudson News reports that Stuart International Airport in Newburgh is getting its second international service, with Atlantic Airways flights to the Faroe Islands from August 22nd through October 4th. The airline's seasonal service will fly direct to Vagar, the sole airport on the Faroe Islands, which are located in the North Atlantic Ocean between Iceland and Norway. Currently, Stuart Airport has flights to Iceland from Play Airlines and to Florida and South Carolina from Allegiant Air and Frontier Airlines. Read more about this story in Mid-Hudson News. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, April 27th. Local early morning temperatures range from 37 degrees in Tannersville to 44 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 47 degrees. Pollen levels remain elevated. However, there is a little bit of hope on the horizon as there is a good chance that the rain is going to squash some of it. The day starts out rainy, and then it begins to wane after noon, coming to an end around 5 p.m., which coincidentally is when we see the high temperature of 59 degrees. Overnight, we get a low temperature of 41 degrees, and it will be dry. Tomorrow looks cloudy, but dry, with a high of 63. At dusk, chances of rain show up, and that is it. Just a whole lot of rain for the foreseeable future. Low temperature of 46 overnight, bounces back up to 53 degrees Saturday afternoon, still rain. Sunday, high of 64, more rain. Monday, rain. Tuesday, rain. Okay, I don't normally get this far ahead of myself, but it does appear rain is all that's on the menu. Let's hope we get a break in there somewhere. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 3:09 a.m., high tide at 9:11 a.m., low at 4:20 p.m., and high again at 10:06 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 52 degrees, and the tide strength is very low. Sunset today will be at 7:34 p.m., sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:33 a.m. Looking way up, we see a geomagnetic storm watch is on, as a light coronal mass ejection interaction is still expected. Solar wind speed is currently 616 kilometers per second at 0.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently Poor Till Dark for all bands, then Fair Below 8 MHz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4.3, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 81. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Broadcast over any FM car radio.
Hey, good looking! We'll be back to pick you up later!
Throw away your bulky transmitters and broadcasting towers. The Superstar Celebrity Microphone lets you hear your voice through any AM radio.
Hey, good looking! We'll be back to pick you up later!
He's in for some loving.
Right now, we are joined by DeForest Brown Jr., who is performing Friday, April 28th at 8 p.m. at MPAC in Troy. He also has a book out called Assembling a Black Counterculture and a new album coming out later in the fall. We'll talk about all that. But welcome to WGXC, DeForest Brown Jr.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So tell us about the show is called Speakers That Speak to You, but it is it sounds like it is part of the book that precedes it and the album that is coming out soon. So tell us, I guess, first about the book that's called Assembling a Black Counterculture.
Yeah, that's a book that I've been writing for the last few years, but it's been in my head for the last like decade since I, you know, was in college. And it's basically a kind of historical science fiction book about the history of techno and its relation to Detroit, industrialization, globalization. And yeah, it just kind of gathers like a lot of just like quotations from interviews, liner notes, just from a lot of Detroit techno releases over the last 30 years in hopes of kind of telling this alternate history of both like electronic music, but also just music in general, kind of starting around 1988 when techno was exported to the UK. And the performance on Friday, Speakers That Speak to You, is adjacent in the sense that a lot of the things I was working out in the book in terms of like looking at how One Atkins was working with drum machines and synthesizers, it's kind of me taking my own version of that to the next level. I've been releasing music under the name Speaker Music, which I guess technically is also the genre that I make. And then like Speakers That Speak to You is me like applying that to this giant, very well-built like ambisonic sound room that yeah, y'all have up here at MPAC.
And what do you mean by speaker music? You call your genre speaker music?
Yeah, it's basically like the format of it is wanting to, I guess, make kind of a really collapsible but really live sounding electronic music. So I use an iPad as like the bass instrument, kind of as like a haptic device, and I kind of like input rhythms and into it. So it's like you'll kind of see me performing with like finger drumming on top of it, or like playing like keyboards, and then that's run through this digital audio workstation called Ableton, which will then be amplified through the sound room. But I call it speaker music because it's this idea of just like inputting a lot of sonic information into the speakers and then using kind of like deep listening techniques and a lot of just listening techniques that I've learned over the years from marching band, concert band, and jazz band. To listening to speakers in a room. And yeah, Friday will be kind of a, I guess, interesting moment to have others join me in that, and in a situation that's not so so concert based. It's a little bit more, I guess we'll call it like a listening session.
And I think you said about the book Assembling Black Counterculture that it's sort of an alternative history, and sort of the world sort of wrote an alternative history of techno. It kind of got co-opted by white musicians like far quicker than any other African-American innovation. Like jazz, it took, I think, many years till Glenn Miller was the biggest jazz artist. But almost immediately, it seemed like techno became
a white seemed like a white genre, even though it was created by African Americans. Is that correct, or tell me where I'm wrong there?
No, that's totally it. And the connection to jazz is kind of why I call it an alternate history. Techno suffers from the same syndrome that jazz musicians of the 1940s and 60s did, in which if you wanted to make money as a musician, you have to travel to Europe, because, you know, there's that point where you have folks like John Coltrane moving away from the standards and taking songs that you know and then like transforming them into songs that you don't know, like right before your eyes. And when Juan Atkins was kind of first developing his idea of techno around 1979, 1980, as like, I think like 17-year-old kid in Detroit, he was working with a lot of like drum machines, like the Roland 808 drum machine that was completely like out of, like off the market. So ironically, he kind of ended up becoming one of the first like bedroom producers in the late 70s, early 80s. And I'm really interested in this correlation between like an amateur musician being able to both create kind of their own sonic palette, but also taking like a kind of sonic snapshot of it, releasing it out into the world, and then using that snapshot to travel across the world, to actually like, you know, move yourself both out of your class but also out of your geographic location. And jazz benefited from having like a really strong pedagogy behind it, a really strong history, you know, moving from moving from bebop into more freer spaces and freer sounds, and then back into kind of like a fusion and like studio sound. There was like kind of a context for jazz. But with techno, the co-oping kind of happened because it was just these amateurs who would talk to some anarchists in Germany, and they would go travel over, play at like a warehouse space where the Berlin Wall was collapsing, and other people surrounding these producers over in Europe were able to buy the gear and basically make their own version pretty quickly. And, you know, there's obviously a lot more like nuance and like a lot of other details to the story that we could totally get into about how this, you know, co-option has happened. But mainly I'm interested in this idea of like the amateur musician professionalizing over time, and speaker music is kind of my way of like, yeah, just taking like an iPad that I've had for years and figuring out how to make studio performance music with it.
So it kind of techno kind of parallels hip hop. Maybe hip hop started a little earlier, depending on your where your starting point is. That's always a big debate. But but it people were manipulating turntables, basically start hip hop and rapping over top of it. And iPad is sort of a similar item to a turntable at this point, right?
Yeah. And actually, I like this comparison of the turntable to the iPad, even more so than rhythm synthesizers and you know, like modular synths and things like that to the iPad, because the idea is taking a consumer device or like a listening device and turning it into something that can be professional and something that can like produce. And I guess with that, I'm kind of working with the idea that Juan Atkins was reading this book called The Third Wave by this futurist and businessman named Alvin Toffler, where Toffler was kind of studying technological changes starting around the 1980s and studying how, you know, humans would adapt to it. And one of the things that he was looking into was music and how music would change over time. And hip hop, it's funny, hip hop has a few different beginnings, right? Like, because rapping parallel to that has been around since like around the 1930s, but like formalized into what we know it as like in the 1970s.
You could also say it goes back centuries too, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, we can also take this back to the West African griot. We can take this back to, you know, all sorts of ideas of like bards and lutes. And that's actually kind of, I mean, what I'm interested in is how these 20th century genres updated ancient, like these ancient practices, but then now being like a millennial in the 21st century with like again, a giant like Amazonic sound room. It's like, how can we take this even further? So yeah, it's, I mean, another thing about it, like to kind of explain the speaker music title or like name, is that with rap, I'm always kind of thinking about how rap, like there's this idea of conscious rap versus mumble rap, but rap is always conscious. Rap is something that like any rapper I've known has like thought in raps, and it's been a way to help them kind of like remember things, deploy information, tell stories. And with speaker music, I'm trying to use abstract sound and rhythms to speak to people.
All right, so we're speaking with DeForest Brown Jr., if you're just tuning in, whose show Speakers That Speak to You is Friday, April 28th at RPI's MPAC. Tell us a little bit about what people will hear if they show up at MPAC on April 28th.
Well, you will hear a new formulation of kind of techno that I've been coming up with called Rhythm and Groove. And it takes this idea of blues and kind of like, it makes it harder. Like I've been thinking a lot about Jimi Hendrix and what it would have, what like that kind of like Electric Ladyland experience would have been like without the band. And if he was working as an electronic producer rather than like as a rock blues rock musician. So yeah, you'll hear, you know, lots of really hard bass, like sub bass. You'll hear lots of like hi-hat rhythms, like live percussion or like samples of live percussion. You'll hear some interesting electronically produced guitar sounds, all in Lydian mode and in a Nokia D. So
is it the Afrofuturist term gets thrown around a lot these days. Is it, would you put your work in that category?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's something that I definitely thought about it, but this idea of Afrofuturism really formalized for me last year when I went to the Afrofuturism festival that Carnegie Hall put on. And that was just a really interesting experience because the curators of it were a lot of people who were like instrumental in formalizing what that term means, like Yatasha Womack, who wrote the book Afrofuturism. We've been in contact a lot since I interviewed her about the festival. And I would definitely say, like, with this performance and after having talked to Afrofuturists, I'm definitely thinking about them, which is also kind of why I brought up Jimi Hendrix, because I feel like we actually don't know where he would have gone with things. And techno is this kind of like interesting missing link in terms of just like studio performance music. So no, I really, really relate to the term Afrofuturism.
It's certainly fun to imagine what Jimi Hendrix would sound like on an 808 or all kinds of different instruments. Yeah,
definitely. And it's, there's a few like threads I've been running through with that, because like my grandfather was really, really big into Jimi Hendrix, saw him at Woodstock and, you know, did that whole thing, and was really into blues. But I also recently found out that we're all from the same neighborhood as Sun Ra, down in Birmingham, Alabama. And
so are you from outer space too?
It's funny. So the album coming out this fall is kind of a rip of that, where it's called Texodus, like Tech Exodus. And I'm trying to meet Sun Ra in space.
Because we could also imagine what he would do with an 808.
Oh my God. Yeah. I would pay good money to hear that.
All right, we've been speaking with DeForest Brown Jr., whose Speakers That Speak to You show is Friday, April 28th at RPI and MPAC. We have just a minute left. Do you want to tell any people that might be coming? Do you need earplugs, dance shoes? What do you need to show up?
All of the above. Earplugs, dance shoes, a nice open heart. yeah, just come out and hear some really radical, hopefully fun, romantic music.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck with the show. Friday, April 28th, DeForest Brown's Speakers That Speak to You is at MPAC in Troy. Thank you again for being a guest today on WGXC.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We are the only party to take fiscal action in a sound mind that would lift the debt limit so we wouldn't have economic damage.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says it's now up to President Joe Biden to negotiate after Republicans approved a bill which would raise the debt limit but require cuts in federal spending, including Biden's climate change and student loan forgiveness programs. Biden has argued the debt limit should be raised without conditions. Congress has just 6 weeks before a potential government default.
Absolutely reprehensible and needs to be condemned in the strongest possible terms. I really find it shocking.
Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski reacts to news of a leaked Supreme Court opinion on overturning Roe v. Wade last summer. Now Murkowski is introducing legislation to require a new code of conduct for the justices. Calls to expand the size of the Supreme Court and ensure ethics standards have gained traction following recent financial disclosure scandals involving Justice Clarence Thomas and Justice Neil Gorsuch. An audio recording of Senator Ted Cruz reveals the Texas Republican advocated for the creation of an electoral commission to verify claims of voter fraud in the 2020 presidential election. Cruz is heard telling Fox News staff voters should have a credible assessment of claims regarding potential voter fraud.
The mechanism to try to force that is denying certification on the 6th.
The recording was leaked by a former Fox News producer. In it, Cruz says he organized 11 senators to object to President Biden's electoral certification on January 6, 2021. Cruz dismissed the recording, saying he publicly called for the same strategy on the Senate floor. Montana House Republicans have voted to censure Zoe Zephyr, a transgender Democratic lawmaker, for what they say are breaches of House decorum. Zephyr told lawmakers last week they would have blood on their hands if they voted for a bill to ban gender-affirming medical care for transgender children. Zephyr says other lawmakers have screamed at her in House chambers and faced no repercussions.
So we're seeing a very undemocratic application of what it means to have decorum.
Zephyr will be barred from the House floor and gallery for the remainder of the session, but is able to vote remotely. Former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson has announced his candidacy for president, citing his consistent conservative leadership.
I bring that same vigor to a fight in another battle, and that battle is for the future of our country and the soul of our party.
Hutchinson has called on former President Donald Trump to drop out of the race, saying the country needs a candidate who is not focused on the past. And Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont says he will not run for president in 2024 and will instead endorse President Joe Biden's reelection. Sanders says the progressive movement's job is to make sure Biden fights for the working class. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Last June, we reported on alleged 2021 breaches of ballot tabulation machines in Georgia and Michigan counties by allies of former President Trump. New reports in the New York Times, CNN, and the Detroit News suggest that probes into those breaches may be moving forward and that President Trump may have been involved in discussions about getting access to the machines. In Georgia, CNN reports that the investigation of President Trump's alleged attempt to influence the outcome of the Georgia election revealed text messages about the machines in Coffee County, Georgia. The messages between Doug Logan, CEO of Cyber Ninjas, and Jim Penrose, a data analyst working with Trump lawyer Sidney Powell, suggest that data from the machines might be used to justify overturning both the 2020 presidential election and the Ossoff-Perdue U.S. Senate race. Democracy group Free Speech for People recently discovered January 6 committee testimony suggesting that President Trump may have had an Oval Office discussion about access to the Georgia and Michigan machines data. In Michigan, court documents show that Logan and Penrose are also subjects of a special prosecutor probe into the breach of voting machines in Antrim County and other counties. The Detroit News reported Monday that a special grand jury is considering charges in the case. We'll be following this developing story. We have links to articles and source documents at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show?
Interesting cars. Really, really,
it would be
really,
about
really
wonderful things. It would be about
chocolate pigs.
She's obsessed with pigs.
Chocolate pigs. Chocolate pigs.
Awesome.
All the way down.
I turned it down.
But only dogs can hear.
Turn his.
I turned it down. Do it.
Did you hear that?
No.
Move to local music. And another good friend of mine, great musician, and an extremely inventive and creative sound. Escapist. I'm gonna call you. I don't know if that's a term, but we're gonna apply that to you. We've got Rick Warren with us today. How you doing, Rick?
Good, Randall. Good to see you. Good to talk with you.
Likewise.
Sound escapist.
There we go. Because you do some of the most inventive and creative work with your guitar and your pedals that I've really ever seen, and I always think. You know, what inspires you? Like, you know, are you always looking for the push the envelope with new sounds and a new way to express yourself in your guitar?
Yeah, that's it. You know, looking for ways to make new sounding music. And I've been known to use a lot of effects pedals. However, lately I've just been enjoying the sound of plugging my guitar into an old, actually 1968 Fender amplifier that I've been working on the electronics for that. So
this is a tube amplifier.
This is, yeah, an old school tube amplifier.
And you know, they say that there's nothing like, you know, the sound reproduction from a tube amplifier as opposed to the new digital series.
That's very true. I haven't played any of the new ones, although one of the main amps that I drag around is a Fender solid state modeling amplifier. That's, you know, it's supposed to be able to sound like a, you know, a small amp right up to a Marshall stack.
And right, right.
There's just something about big speakers moving air that really does it. Anyway, even that, with just an acoustic guitar, I'm always looking for something to sound different. And, you know, still be musical.
Now you're known, your moniker around town is Lightning Rick Warren. And we met playing often at Club Helsinki, and we've played many private events, and you're just a great all-around guitar player. What is the state of music? Do you miss being able to play? Club Helsinki is closed. Do you miss playing that whole Tuesday night experience and the local scene, or has it morphed into something else for you?
Is choice C both? Is that allowed? I do miss, you know, Club Helsinki, the Tuesday evenings. You know, that was our social night out to get together, talk with everybody, and you know, you run into somebody. Oh, you play guitar. You know, can you play in B flat minor 7 flat 5 sharp 11? Come on up and you know, play a song with me. So that was always fun. I know Cameron mentioned our commingulations very
yes.
often.
And I have no idea what you just said about that's drummer. I have no idea about those song specifications. But I know that we used to, you know, get up there and create some great moments through our improvisation.
Yes. Creating music out of thin air, music out of silence. In fact, I just lost over the weekend a great friend and mentor, Carl Berger.
I'm sorry to hear that.
He's a jazz pianist, vibraphonist from Europe. And he came to the States in like 1972 or so. He was associated with Ornette Coleman. Mm. I think the story is he went up to Don Cherry one night. Yes, you know, over in Europe, you'd get a gig at a you know, a club, and you'd be there every night month. You know, you'd be playing there every month, every night for a month. So Carl goes up to Don Cherry, who was a, you know, established star in Europe, and says, I'd like to play with you guys. And Don says, okay, rehearsal's tomorrow at 4. And from there, it was, you know, his career kind of just took off.
Just like that.
And pretty much from the story he tells, I met him one day. He came into my high school music theory class and talking about this creative music studio that he was starting up. He had, Ornette was, you know, giving some backing and Impetuous and help and, you know, getting other stars to sign on with him. So he had this creative music studio at a resort lodge off of Route 28 between Kingston and Woodstock for many years through the 80s until Reagan got elected and then a lot of arts funding disappeared. Mm-hmm. And then I was never involved back then with him, but a few years ago they started up again doing these week-long workshops outside of Phoenicia, a place called the Full Moon Resort. So I started going to those regularly. That was great, meeting people. People would come from California, Cleveland, all over the world, and we'd spend a week learning different things from Carl and many other different musicians. He'd have at least two guiding artists, they would call them. And it's a big loss to the jazz improvisation music community here.
Absolutely. You know, and I know that you partake of a lot of workshops, and you go away a lot, and to expand your sort of musical universe, you travel to, you know, learn techniques and styles from all over. And how has that impacted the way that you play?
How has it impacted what?
The way that you play, like your style.
I think I've just become amalgamation, distillation of, you know, everything different that I've heard, from Link Wray to Alan Holdsworth to John McLaughlin to Pete Townsend to, of course, Hendrick. There's just so many guitarists, so many other musicians. I mean, I don't exclusively listen to guitar music by any means. And
now I know you're a big Grateful Dead fan and player. We played that at what was the place in Woodstock?
Yeah, with the Clouds band.
Yeah,
years ago.
Yeah,
yeah.
And hold on, what is that? It's on the tip of my tongue. And it was a Chinese restaurant. Walk and Roll.
Walk and Roll. Yes.
Yep. And it's still. Yeah,
unfortunately, that's gone now.
Yeah.
But it's reincarnated as, it's called Pearl Moon. The new owners have done an amazing job with the space there. Much like the Colony,
right,
at the other sort of other end of town.
So, you're pretty much a regional musician. I know that you play a lot in Kingston. You play here in Hudson. I don't know if you're going, if you go that much north, but I know that south, Woodstock is a familiar stomping ground for you. What's your assessment of sort of the local music scene at this moment?
At this moment, there's, you know, different places sort of seem to, you know, become a hot spot at one point or another. Right now, for me, Woodstock seems to be coming up, and I've had, you know, two or three gigs down there already this year. Kingston, Hudson, you know, when it had Club Helsinki, you know, certainly was a place. It's certainly a residence, so, you know. So many artists have come here to the Hudson and Catskill area, to include that too, I believe.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think now you have some things are starting to fill the void from Club Helsinki, you know, like the Half Moon downtown.
Yep, you got
Avalon across the river.
Yep. And you got them now, just on the tip of my tongue, I interviewed him last week, right up here, the theater, the Park Theater.
That's been doing interesting, a lot of interesting stuff too.
And so let's talk about get down to the specifics. When you go, and you have a broad range. We play funk, we play jazz, we play blues. But when you do the music that I think that you like most to do, the more experimental stuff. Where does that, what drives you to sort of create and find devices that allow you to make any manner of sounds from your guitar?
It all comes from the blues. I mean, I may not be playing blues notes, blues chords, blues scales, whatever they are, and it just all comes from trying to make music, maybe trying to convey a feel or a mood. I do my Sunday evening live streams, which is, kind of a challenge to myself to sit down and play the guitar for an hour. No idea what I'm going to do. I try to avoid playing as much as possible when I'm getting set up. Allow myself maybe, half an hour to set up in the room, which, it's pretty much left set up, but, things get moved around. And just kind of go from there and invent and make something musical from the silence.
Absolutely.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
On April 25th, the New York for All Coalition rallied at the Capitol in support of the New York for All Act, which prohibits local law enforcement and state agencies from working with the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, and Customs and Border Patrols. All New Yorkers should be entitled to live a free life without the threat of deportation whenever they engage in normal everyday activities. We hear from Cassie Bocanegra of the New York Immigrant Coalition. The main bill sponsors, Assemblymember Karinas Reyes and Senator Andrew Gonardis, also Richard, a Nigerian immigrant with the Immigrant Defense Project, Luis Jimenez with Alizan Agricola, and Rosie Wagner of the Vera Institute of Justice.
My name is Cassandra Bocanegra. I'm the manager of organizing and strategy for the Finger Lakes region with the New York Immigration Coalition. We're here today to come together to pass the New York for All Act, which would prohibit local law enforcement and state agencies from colluding with federal immigration authorities. Every single New Yorker, regardless of their immigration status, should be able to go about their daily lives, their communities without fear. But right now, New York State and local law enforcement can be used to carry out Customs and Border Patrol and ICE's cruel agenda. A routine trip to the grocery store or the doctor's office shouldn't make a child worry about their mother or father getting ripped away from them. In states like Texas, Florida, and others, ICE and CBP and law enforcement are working together to target immigrants. But in New York, we don't treat our neighbors like that. In New York, we stand up for immigrants. It's New York for all. We will be saying no to ICE's intimidation tactics. We will be saying no to ICE tearing apart families. And we will be making sure that our tax dollars don't go towards carrying out ICE's cruel agenda. New York for All is about protecting New York families and workers. The legislator and Governor Hochul need to pass the New York for All Act this year. So please join me in welcoming our champion for immigrant New Yorkers, Assemblymember Karinas Reyes.
We are here to say that New York and our country was built by immigrants for immigrants, and we are not going to continue to stand for the hunting of our people, and that is really what's happening with ICE. ICE is a rogue agency, and in our state, we are not going to be doing their bidding. We are not going to give them the resources to do their work. We are going to protect our neighbors, the people that help us run this state. Every single day, we're going to give them the dignity that they deserve by saying that it's okay for them to go to school and go to the grocery store or report a crime or seek health care without fear of starting immigration proceedings. We're asking the governor to make this a priority. And I'm going to be honest, she hasn't been great on immigration issues. And this is an opportunity for her to show us that she cares about all New Yorkers, because our farms can't function without our immigrants. Our houses wouldn't get cleaned. Many people's children wouldn't have somebody to watch over them without the people who are doing the labor.
Hear from our new Senate sponsor, Senator Gonardis.
Senator Andrew Gonardis, I am the proud grandson, a fourth generation Greek American. My grandparents and great grandparents came to this country. over 100 years ago. We all share the same background. We all share the same common story, and that is we all came from somewhere else. That doesn't matter. That doesn't change. That immutable fact about you does not change whether or not you have a piece of paper with a stamp on it or not. You live here, you work here, you raise a family here, you go to school here, you go to church here, you go to the library here. You deserve to live in your community, in this city, in this state, with dignity. No questions asked. But for far too many of our neighbors, that is not a reality, because instead of living in dignity, and instead of being able to go to a school with their children for a parent-teacher conference, or being able to go walk down the block to go to church with their family, or be able to walk into a courthouse, or walk into a library, or go anywhere, instead they have to live in fear.
Member from Oswego, Richard, to tell us about his experience with the lack of New York for All.
My name is Richard. I am 26 years old. I was born in Nigeria and came to the U.S. 9 years ago. New York has been a place of hope and opportunity. In my time here studying, I got married, I had a child, I began to grow roots in this state and call it my home. In 2020, my life changed when I was arrested and faced a charge that I wanted to contest, but I was worried about my immigration status. I looked on Google to see if ICE would be able to arrest you in court and found out that New York passed a law to protect against this, and that the New York courts also forbade local law enforcement from arresting people for ICE. This made me feel like I could exercise my rights. In 2022, I went to Oswego County Court for a hearing before the judge. I voluntarily left my home that day to attend this hearing. While I was standing in the hallway, I was approached by two people from the Oswego Police Department who had an ICE warrant, and they wanted me to come with them. They told me that if I didn't come with them, they would take me by force. I was so confused about how that could be, as this was local police, since they did not have the authority to execute an ICE warrant. I did not want anything violent to happen to me, so I went with them. They handcuffed me and took me to the station. I was later taken to Buffalo Federal Detention Facility by ICE agents, where I would be detained for 10 months. I never thought in a million years that my arrest by local police on a charge that I was fighting would result in a nightmare where ICE would keep me in custody for so long. I was clinically diagnosed with anxiety. During my detention, I was brought back to Oswego County and was illegally kept for several days. I was assaulted by correctional officers, which resulted in bodily injury. They said several derogatory terms towards me, including, "His dumbass is going back to Nigeria." They kept me in a cell covered in swastikas. They forced me to shower barefoot in a moldy shower and refused to give me any of my prescribed medications. New York has historically always shown courage and resilience towards rising against oppression and standing for liberty. We are asking for liberty for fellow New Yorkers. I do not want other New York immigrants being too scared to exercise their rights. Constantly living with fear and anxiety of being subjected to inhuman acts by local authorities meant to serve and protect them. What happened to me should be stopped from happening to them. We must pass New York for All now.
Of Alianza Agricola, New York's only worker-founded, worker-led organization representing the interest of immigrant dairy farm workers.
My name is Luis Jimenez. I am an agricultural worker, and I am the president and founding member of Alianza Agricola. We are from Western New York, near the Canadian border. I am here to tell you that living in rural areas near the Canadian border means that we have an abundance of immigration officials in the region. For our community, the police are immigration because we know and have seen the consequences of collusion between the police and other state services in the immigrant community here. Because we don't have New York for All, the immigrant community and their families feel anxiety. They are even afraid to go to work because we have seen how the police collude with immigration and the consequences those interactions have. We have members who are parents of very young children. Many of them have had run-ins with the police when they went to the store, to the doctor, or to school, and these incidents have resulted in deportation. I want to tell you about a member who worked in a dairy who went to the store, and because his headlight wasn't working, the police stopped him. They asked for identification, but he did not have one. And since he did not speak English either, the police called immigration to request interpretation. Then immigration asked about his legal status. He did not know how to answer, and immigration took him into custody. The New York for All Act will bring a sense of security to the community to be able to go on with their lives and be able to participate in their communities.
My name is Rosie Wang. I'm a senior program associate at the Vera Institute of Justice. In our work at Vera, too often we hear about people being torn away from their families and their communities and thrown into immigration detention, all because they encountered state and local officials that conspired with ICE to target immigrants. Immigrant communities in this state deserve the protection that New York for All can provide. If made into law, New York for All would prohibit the use of state resources for federal immigration enforcement. In New York State, more than 200,000 people are in immigration court, fighting deportation, fighting for their lives, fighting to stay with their families. Many do not have legal help because they cannot afford it. New York for All offers protections that would help alleviate the fear that many immigrants and their loved ones live with. This important legislation ensures that local governments do not misuse their resources to advance a federal immigration agenda. It places common sense limitations on the ability of local governments to conspire with federal immigration enforcement across all of New York State.
This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. The Times Union reports that the State Department of Environmental Conservation will hold public meetings in the Adirondack High Peaks and Catskills to make recommendations about handling all the visitors to the popular spots such as Catskills Cove and Haynes Falls. DEC Commissioner Basil Sago said in a statement, and I quote, DEC sustainable use initiatives require public participation to be successful. Listening to public and stakeholder perspectives about the High Peaks and Catskill Cove project areas will provide DEC with the important data to support successful strategies for balancing conservation and public access in these popular forest preserve destinations, end quote. The DEC says they are looking into the experiential, social, and public safety elements of visitor use at the popular sites. The meeting is in the Adirondacks May 9th and the second May 10th is from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Cooper Tree Restaurant at Hunter Mountain. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Kate Lisa reports for New York State of Politics that Governor Kathy Hochul publicly acknowledged on April 25th that she failed to get her housing proposal into the state budget negotiations with leaders of the legislature. Hochul said she would continue to try to build new housing in the state. She said, and I quote, "We're going to go back. This is just the beginning of a journey. We're going to work on this until we solve this," end quote. Earlier, Hochul said the state had an affordable housing crisis and wanted to build 800,000 new spaces for people to live, but she wanted to override local zoning rules to do that, which was not popular with lawmakers. She said, and I quote, "You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. I took the shot," end quote. She added, and I quote, "Gretzky would say you only make 1 out of 5 of those shots, and that's okay. So at least we're trying with the legislature. I'm not giving up," end quote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that construction on replacement bridges in Hunter and Lexington gets underway in June in Greene County. The county is replacing a bridge on County Road 83 over Shanty Hollow Brook in the town of Hunter and the Timberlake Road Bridge over Broad Street Hollow Stream in the town of Lexington. The Hunter project also includes a bridge for a bike path. The Hunter Bridge dates back to 1978, while the Lexington Bridge was first built in 1987. The Department of Transportation's 2022 New York State Highway Bridge Data Survey said that there were 17 Greene County bridges rated as poor, but not these two. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Jamal Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that former Columbia County Historical Society trustee Richard Ryan of Kinderhook left the organization an inheritance of $250,000 for the James Vanderpoel House. Ryan died in 2022, and his will states the Historical Society will get the money if they raise a matching $250,000 by October 2024. Historical Society Executive Director Lisa Weilbacher said, and I quote, "Conserving a historic building like the James Vanderpoel House requires constant care and the ability to meet unforeseen challenges. Unlocking these funds will allow us to be better stewards for the long term," end quote. The Vanderpoel House dates back to 1819 or 1820 and was built by prominent lawyer and civic leader James Vanderpoel. The Daughters of Columbia County Historical Society, a precursor to the Columbia County Historical Society, bought the property in 1925. Ryan lived across Broad Street in Kinderhook from the Vanderpoel House. There will be a celebration of Ryan's life at the James Vanderpoel House in June. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, a slight chance of rain before 9 a.m. It will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 60 degrees. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 39 degrees. And on Friday, mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 59 degrees. And Friday night, a chance of showers. It will be cloudy with a temperature low of around 43 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia counties.
You are invited to join me upon the Cypress Bough. Music from North Africa, West and Central Asia. First Monday of every month, 8 to 10 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Again, it will be. Though the course may change sometimes, rivers always reach the sea.